This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
The trial will go on in the case of Chad Daybell as planned. Judge Stephen Boyce ruling today that John Pryor, the attorney for Chad Daybell, does not have sufficient grounds to walk away from the case and be replaced by public defenders. In the interest of keeping things on track and giving Chad Daybell a timely trial, that was the ruling. We take you now to the courtroom for the full audio of that hearing.
Okay. We are live streaming this proceeding. We'll be on the record on case CR 22-21-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. Scheduled this morning is a hearing on defense counsel's motion to withdraw. A couple of preliminary matters before we get started here. The court will note there is an order governing courtroom conduct. The court is live streaming this on the official YouTube channel of the Idaho Supreme Court. I'm not permitting any other recording, video, or audio of the proceedings. So if you have a device that does that, that's not permitted. In addition, if you do have devices that make noise, please make sure they're silent or turned off to not disrupt the proceedings. And that's all set forth in the order governing courtroom conduct that's in effect for this hearing. I'll note on the record that the state is represented this morning by Rob Wood and Lindsay Blake, prosecutors for Madison and Fremont County. John Pryor is here with the defendant, Mr. Daybell, and the court scheduled on shortened time today's hearing after receiving a proposed motion to withdraw as counsel. That was filed on January 11th. There was a declaration supporting the motion also filed January 11th. The court reviewed those and determined that the motions originally filed under seal would be unsealed, and they were. The state then yesterday on the 17th of January filed an objection to the motion to withdraw. I'll also note that the court entered an order just this morning that unsealed the previously sealed order of the court as it related to a August 25th, 2023 order. And I've provided copies of that to counsel, but it does have some relevance to today's proceedings. So let me confirm that. Mr. Pryor, you would have already had a copy of that order, but from the state, Ms. Blake or Mr. Wood, did you receive the court's order unsealing the August 25th from last year order and a copy of that order?
Yes, Your Honor. They were provided to counsel today.
Okay, thank you. And they're doing construction right through the doorway here, so counsel could speak up probably into the microphones, unfortunately. Try to make the record as clear as we can here. Mr. Pryor, are you ready to proceed on your motion?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, and who will be arguing on behalf for the state today?
I will, Your Honor.
Ms. Blake. All right, Mr. Pryor, then, as I mentioned, I've reviewed the motion. If you'd like to submit arguments in support of the motion, you can do that at this time.
Judge, because of the microphone, may I have permission to remain seated?
You may, and if you'd just pull the microphone right up close there, Mr. Pryor, because of this noise from construction, that would be helpful.
And Judge, I was advised by your clerk that the microphones are doing quite well, and that I should probably, and is my voice at this point acceptable, Madam Clerk, in terms of the tone? It's not washing out?
Yeah, it's fine. We're picking it up. Thank you.
Judge, I appreciate the court releasing the order from 8/25/23. The court's well aware, ex parte, that I filed in January of 2023, well over a year ago, a year and 7 days, a motion to seek additional counsel. And the court identified the fact that at this point, being privately retained, that Mr. Daybell may not be eligible for having additional attorneys represent him. And I'm relying on the court's interpretation of that statute. And Judge, what has transpired, and as a matter of procedural history, in middle to late of 2022, I started the process of seeking additional counsel. I believe that was probably about 2 years ago. I started seeking the possibility, a year and a half ago, seeking the possibility of getting additional counsel aid me in this case when I realized the magnitude of the discovery. That process involved, Judge, going through the list of qualified attorneys on the Public Defense Commission list. I took the process of identifying all of those folks and then reaching out to all of them. And the ones I didn't speak to directly, I spoke through the various public defenders, the people who ran the public defender's office. I went through that list and at that point was unable to find anybody that was available to do this. And it's no secret, it's reasonable common knowledge that the Public Defense Commission is having a difficult time finding death qualified attorneys to represent in these kind of cases. I then contacted the commission on a couple of occasions and spoke to their one of their assistants and their directors and got the idea of maybe reaching out to out-of-state attorneys and did the process of contacting about six out-of-state attorneys to see if that was a possibility as well. And again, with no luck. Shortly thereafter, I went through again and went through the same process, looking through the list of qualified attorneys. In January of 2023, about a year ago, I reached out to the court and said, listen, it's going to require additional counsel. Mr. Daybell is indigent. He doesn't have the ability or financial ability to hire another private counsel at this point. And the court went through its analysis and thus came up with the order that you released today, Judge. What has transpired, Judge, is that approximately in Judge, I don't want to misstate, so I want to be very careful about this, but I believe, and it was in October of last year, I reached out to a private attorney that I know and asked him if he would consider becoming death penalty qualified to aid me in this case, and he agreed to do that and started the process. He has been in relative contact with the Public Defense Commission, and at this point, up until today, when I spoke to him this morning, the holdup is the CLE, but that, you know, whether it's no fault of his or the Public Defense Commission, and I'm not putting any blame, but at this point, there's no appointment, there's no decision that has been made, and I'm really unclear because the commission won't tell me his status, only I can get relayed by what he's telling me. But it came to, I came to realize in late December that the amount of work that I'm going to need to perform before the trial was of such an extent that it would, in my opinion, create a situation where not all of the things that needed to be done for the trial commencing in April 1st could get done. This put me in a difficult situation. I want to relay to the court.
When you say December, what, December of this last year, 23?
December of 2023, Judge.
All right.
I realized at that point when there wasn't a decision about him being appointed, and the court obviously directed with its order that you'd be willing to compensate another attorney to help me. But in December, I contacted the attorney again. I was in relative frequent contact with him. And he said, listen, there hasn't been a decision. I said, you know, please contact them, find out what the holdup is. Where are we on this thing? And since that time, it was more than weekly that I was communicating with him. Up to today, there still hasn't been a decision. I don't know what the status is, and there hasn't been an approval. At this point, this puts me in the situation where this court, I don't think, is obligated to appoint an attorney. Mr. Daybell has private counsel. And I want to state to the court that I don't desire to get off this case. I want to stay on this case. And regardless of Mr. Daybell's financial situation, I want to stay on this case. I could care less about the money. Mr. Daybell wants me to stay on this case.
Well, that's not really what your motion says, though, Mr. Pryor. Your motion says you want off the case because it's going to cost too much for you to work, the work it's going to take to get it through trial without compensation.
So, right, and that's correct, Judge.
This is an important issue for me today. Are you wanting to withdraw because you think you deserve to be paid for the work you do, which I understand, But when I'm considering the standards under Rule 44.1, which is discretionary under Part A, on a leave to withdraw, I may allow you to withdraw for good cause. And what I'm trying to determine is, you want to withdraw because you're not being paid enough to continue through trial, or are you seeking to withdraw because you're simply not going to be prepared and ready for trial?
Judge, the situation is this, is that when I say to the court, and I'm saying that in all sincerity, I don't need to get paid for this case. The concern is this, is that I, at least at this perspective, Judge, I'm going to be doing this by myself. And it's going to expend a lot of resources and a lot of time that I'm not going to be able to commit to other projects or other situations. Now, obviously, I'm not taking on a lot of other obligations because of this case. Do I want to get paid? Everybody wants to get paid for what they do. Am I making that the only reason to withdraw? Well, it's twofold. Do I want to get paid for the work that I've done in this case? I do. I'd like to get compensated for the next 2.5 months and for the 2 months of the trial. And I do want to get paid, and I think it's fair. And Mr. Daybell and I had a discussion about this. Mr. Daybell expressed to me that he doesn't feel comfortable me continuing in this case if I'm not getting compensated for the work. And I advised him and told him that I don't need to get paid. I'm willing to do that. So if I'm not being clear, Judge, I'm willing to do it. Do I want to get paid and do I want to get compensated for this case? Yes. Do I think it's fair that I'm not getting compensated? I don't think it's fair. But it's twofold, Judge. The only way that Mr. Daybell is going to be ordered, or the only way the court can order Mr. Daybell getting additional counsel, is if I withdraw. And that's the only situation that would cause the court to say, all right, Mr. Pryor's granted leave to withdraw because he wants to be compensated. Mr. Pryor wants to be paid for the work that he needs to do for the next 4 months. And Mr. Daybell agrees with me that it's not fair that I work for the next 4 months without being compensated. If the court decides to deny the motion, I want to make it clear, Judge, that I'm prepared to go forward and push this case to the end regardless. And I'm committed to that. Do I think it's fair that I don't get paid? No. Do I want to get paid? I absolutely want to get paid for the work that I do. And that's, you know, and if I was unclear in my declaration, Judge, that's where I stand on this issue. But the only way for Mr. Daybell to get appointed two capital qualified attorneys, and the only, you know, and the purpose of getting capital qualified attorneys, Judge, is when the government has to pay for attorneys, they get to dictate what qualifications you need to be a capital defense attorney. I chose not to go through that process and get capital qualified, even though the criteria that they've established, I qualify. But at this point, I don't see any choice. If I don't get assistance from another attorney to help me in this case, I don't have any choice but to withdraw. The primary reason is that there is no mechanism that I can see based on the court's interpretation of the statute that allows Mr. Daybell to get assistance mandated by this court unless I withdraw. But let me be clear. Do I want to get paid for the work that I'm going to do? I absolutely want to. And does Mr. Daybell want me to get paid? He does. Does he think it's fair? He does not think it's fair, and he wants me to be compensated. And that's where I stand on this. If the court decides that they're going to deny the motion and say, no, Mr. Pryor, I'm not going to let you off. I'm not going to harbor any hard feelings. I'm not going to harbor any dislike for Mr. Daybell. I'm going to go forward and I'm going to do the best I can. And I'm going to make an effort to try to find someone to help me, even if it's the day before trial. But again, let me be clear. Do I want to get compensated? Yes, Judge. Do I think this is fair? No. But by the same token, primarily, Judge, is the only mechanism I can think of to allow Mr. Daybell to get two capital qualified attorneys to help him with this case is if I step away and withdraw from this case.
Prior, going back to your preparation for trial, of course, this is a capital case. And if there's a conviction in the case, then under Idaho Code 19-2515, there's a special sentencing proceeding. And Idaho has adopted ABA standards for capital defense cases. And generally, that requires, for example, the appointment of a mitigation specialist for the defense team as part of those proceedings. And I'm not asking you to reveal any defense strategy or even list a name, but the concerns I have here is you say you'll go through and do the trial, but I really want to know, are you really ready for this trial? For example, do you have a mitigation specialist that would be prepared in the event of a conviction in this trial?
Judge, if the court wants to have an answer to that question, at this point, I'd like to take a recess, close the proceedings, and disclose that issue, because that is a trial issue, and it's a trial strategy that at this point, I am not prepared to make an open statement on live TV about what my strategy is. If the court wants to take a recess, go in chambers, I'd be happy to discuss where I stand on this. In terms of the ABA standards, Judge, in terms of complying with the ABA standards, I'm aware of those standards. I'm aware of what that obligation is. But again, in terms of how I'm going to proceed in that manner, I would prefer to do that in either in chambers or in a closed proceeding.
Okay, and I think that's a fair enough request. Again, I'm not asking you to reveal trial strategy or publicly put that out, but these are legitimate concerns I have in weighing out whether or not Mr. Daybell is going to receive effective assistance of counsel in this case if you are permitted to remain on by me denying this motion. So I do want to get into that issue and discuss that. The state's entitled to know the answers to that as part of their objection to this motion. In lieu of doing that in chambers or off the record, it's got to be on the record. It needs to be in a sealed closed portion of the hearing, I'll determine under ICAR 32. And I think really the best way to do that, unfortunately, at the inconvenience of those in attendance here, is likely to clear the courtroom and allow that discussion to take place with only those necessary personnel in here to conduct the proceedings as part of a sealed closed hearing. So that's what I'll do at this point to go through those issues, and then we'll come back on in a public proceeding. So I would request that courthouse security and the bailiffs, if we could have everyone step out except for the clerk and the necessary security while Mr. Daybell is here, we will close this portion of the proceedings. And also for the bailiffs, if you could just make sure no one's within earshot of the a doorway as well, to make sure it's not carrying through on the microphones. And I appreciate your accommodating that. We'll also, of course, stop the proceedings from being live streamed, and then we will come back on the record once we're ready. We'll take a brief recess while that occurs.
All rise.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, we're back on the record on case CR 22-21-16-23, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. This is a hearing on defense counsel's motion to withdraw. The court conducted a closed portion of the proceedings to make further inquiry, and then in addition, conducted an ex parte proceeding without the state's present to inquire of the defendant regarding counsel. And with that concluded, now the defense has presented their argument in support of the motion. So at this time, the court will consider the objection from the state, noting that this was a shortened hearing, so the objection was filed yesterday, which I do find timely. I have read and considered the objection, and Ms. Blake, if you'd like to present argument in support of the objection, you can do that at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the state recognizes that this is a decision that is solely within the court's discretion. I think Idaho Criminal Rule 44.1 clearly outlines that. It does indicate that a motion to withdraw can be granted, may be granted by a court for good cause. The state also recognizes that the Sixth Amendment guarantees a defendant the right to counsel. There have been additional courts that have reviewed that and provided some additional interpretations, which includes a defendant's right to conflict-free counsel. The state is appreciative of the court conducting an inquiry today because case law also lays out that a trial court's failure to conduct an inquiry into any conflict may result in a reversal of a conviction down the road. Additionally, the onus is on an attorney seeking to withdraw to present sufficient facts to support the motion. I think from the state's perspective, we are a little confused today because we read the affidavit that was presented to the court. Most of our motion was in response to that. The court has, in fact, done the inquiry and answered most of the questions the state had, also unsealing the order from the January proceeding where the defendant had referenced that Mr. Daybell was found indigent. We now have reviewed the transcript of that, and that did answer some of the state's additional questions, one being that there was an actual finding of indigency. The reason that that's so important in this case is because the Idaho criminal rules outline if someone is charged with a capital offense and they're found to be indigent, I think the term they use is needy, but the equivalent, and they choose to hire counsel, they're allowed to do that. They can have private counsel of their choosing. However, if they opt to request the court appoint counsel, then there are certain requirements, and that includes having a capital qualified first chair attorney and a capital qualified second chair attorney to assist them in the proceedings. In addition to that, it flags some additional requirements that the public defenders have to comply with. And there are quite a few of them in that list that must be complied with. But again, if a defendant opts to have private counsel, I think they do so knowing that their private counsel would not have to comply with those, or at least their counsel should be advising them of that. But they could also choose to forego having private counsel once they're found indigent in order to allow capital qualified attorneys to be appointed. In the review of the proceedings from back in January, it appears that there was a request to have some additional counsel assist on the case, and that was made by Mr. Pryor with his client, Mr. Daybell, present. At that juncture, it looks like Mr. Pryor was advised that if he could find someone else to assist in the case, that there may be funds available to help pay for that second attorney. In later proceedings, it looks like the court revisited that issue when no other attorney made an appearance. And at some point in those proceedings, Mr. Daybell was asked and essentially waived his right to have capital qualified attorneys. He opted to stick with Mr. Pryor. What's frustrating for the state is back in January, a year ago, both the defendant and Mr. Pryor were aware of the defendant's financial situation. They clearly presented it to the court for the finding of indigency. At that juncture, they also were well aware that there was no second chair helping on this matter. So here we are a year later, and for the first time, this issue is being brought up that, hey, I actually want to withdraw because I'm not going to get paid. I'd have to work 24/7 in order to be prepared for trial and still probably can't get everything done in time for trial. So we've got two issues within that motion. One, the not getting paid, and the second one, whether or not Mr. Pryor can be prepared for trial. The state tries to be cautious in interjecting ourselves too much when it comes to a defendant and their choice of counsel. However, I think the ethical rules and other rules mandate that prosecutors try to ensure that defendants have the right or are advised and actually have counsel representing them in proceedings. When we look at that requirement of the state, as well as some of the other factors the state has to consider, such as appellate issues, the state tries to be cognizant of those and do our best to avoid creating them. I think that's what the court has indicated here today. The real question is, at least for the state, the finances the state's staying out of, but the real question for the state is, can Mr. Pryor be effective at trial? The state doesn't want to redo a trial. We don't want to get through trial and then have an appellate issue that requires us to do that again. While the state is extremely frustrated that this is being filed so late, and we are frustrated for the citizens, we're frustrated for the victims in this case. If this motion's granted, the state fully recognizes it's going to cause a pretty significant delay. And now the victims' families have to wait that much longer. The state now has to absorb additional costs. It's frustrating. But in looking at the big picture, we also want to ensure that we don't have counsel that cannot be adequately prepared for trial. When I said the state was a little confused today, the reason for that confusion is I'm referencing what was said in the motion. What's been presented here in court today is very different. So we have conflicting statements from defense counsel at this point. The motion read as if counsel was indicating, I cannot be effective. If you make me stay on this case, I cannot be effective. The reason I say that is no person can work 24/7 on something. We all have to have time to sleep. We have to have time to do other things. So I know it's a phrase used a lot, but the reality is if working 24/7, Mr. Pryor cannot be prepared for trial, what he's indicating is he would be ineffective at trial. What he's presented today is no, I can be effective. The motion says I'm not going to get paid. I want off the case. Today what's being presented is no, I'm fine not getting paid. I'll stay on the case. So if Mr. Pryor's representations today are I'm okay not getting paid and I can be effective, I don't actually know why we're here today. This doesn't appear to be a true motion to withdraw. The concern for the state is we've had multiple continuances in this case, and I recognize there can be arguments back and forth as to who did what and who caused the continuance. But at the end of the day, a year ago, Mr. Pryor was fighting very hard to get a continuance. He filed multiple motions to get a severance. He was finally successful with those in January of last year. Maybe it was February, but he ended up getting both a severance and a continuance. Got a year-long continuance. Again, last January, Mr. Daybell had been found indigent. They knew there wasn't a second chair. He's proceeded on the case for a year. He had the benefit of watching the co-defendant's trial. He knew exactly how long that trial was, was able to observe and see how many witnesses there were, should have had a very good idea of what the trial preparation was going to require at that juncture. So again, very frustrated that we're getting here, but we had that. The request was, I need a continuance to test the DNA. We get past the trial. I'm actually not going to test the DNA. The state recognizes that different tactical decisions can be made, but it was very frustrating that we ended up with a continuance and severance for something that never ended up getting tested. Now here we are again, a couple months. I think today is actually 2 months before we're supposed to start some trial proceedings. And we're hearing a motion again on a request to withdraw, where the representations today differ significantly from what was put in the affidavit and motion. So this does appear to be another attempt to simply get a continuance. So the state's position on this would be, based on the representations today, it doesn't appear this is a motion to withdraw. And if Mr. Pryor's representations today are accurate, then I think the motion should be denied. The one question the state has that has not been answered directly to the state, and maybe the court has this information, is there were some conflicting things also represented about Mr. Daybell and his specific position on this. In the affidavit, it indicated he did not want Mr. Pryor to remain on the case, that he wanted to have capital qualified attorneys appointed, that he didn't feel it was fair Mr. Pryor wasn't getting paid. Today, at least from the state's understanding, is we're hearing that Mr. Daybell does in fact want Mr. Pryor to get paid, so he wants him off the case. But then we're also hearing that Mr. Daybell would like Mr. Pryor to stay on the case. And I think that's really the important question today for the state is, does Mr. Daybell in fact want Mr. Pryor removed from the case? He's hired as private counsel. Is he in fact requesting Mr. Pryor be removed to have capital qualified counsel appointed? Because I think that's a different analysis and a different scenario than an attorney asking to be removed. So the state does not know the answer to that. I think we've...
Ms. Blake, I want to be careful because I had an ex parte proceeding, but in general terms, I think it's appropriate for me to advise the state that Mr. Daybell does desire to have Mr. Pryor continue in the case, and as you mentioned, is also very concerned and does not want him obligated to essentially work for free. So that's his overall position in general terms.
And I think that's where we kind of run into an issue. While he may not want him to work for free, Mr. Pryor was hired privately. If a person has the resources to hire private counsel, or if a private attorney decides to stay on pro bono, I think that's the counsel and the defendant's choice. I don't think there's any avenue to allow Mr. Pryor to be paid through another mechanism. I also don't think there's a mechanism that allows a public defender to be appointed to assist Mr. Pryor. I think under the statute, it's if you're indigent and you're asking for counsel, you get a first chair and a second chair qualified appointed. I don't think under the statutes and the criminal rules, I don't see any hybrid system allowed. So I guess the state's concern is if that's the position of both the defendant and counsel, then we should simply be proceeding to trial and this motion should be denied. It's not a true motion to withdraw. If Mr. Pryor is saying I can't be prepared for trial in April, the state's very frustrated that this is clearly just a veiled motion to continue with a different title attached to it. Because that appears to be the true argument today is I need more time. So the state's very frustrated with that. Mr. Pryor's already had a year continuance. I guess from the state's perspective, if Mr. Pryor is going to stay on, we're headed to trial in April. The state's ready to move forward. If Mr. Pryor is saying I can't be effective at that point, then I think capital qualified counsel should be appointed and we should move forward with that counsel appointed and selecting a new trial date. But I don't think Mr. Pryor should be granted a continuance if that's really what's being sought today and that's what it truly sounds like is being requested.
All right, thank you for the argument and response, Mr.
Judge,
Blake.
Can I respond?
I was gonna allow your response, Mr. Pryor, so go ahead.
Judge, I don't think I've been inconsistent in my representations in my declaration and what was said today. This court took the time to inquire of Mr. Daybell, and I believe what Mr. Daybell related to the court is consistent with what was put in the declaration. The reality of it is this, is that I disagree with counsel, and I don't know what she's reading or how she's interpreting a statute, but this court entered an order allowing the assistance of a second counsel to help in the preparation of this case and did it some time ago. The reality, Judge, is that although I've made a strong and diligent effort to find co-counsel to help me in this, it's been difficult and I haven't been able to accomplish that. And the reality is Mr. Daybell recognizes where we are in this thing and what needs to be done in the future. I don't have the benefit of Fremont and Madison County with their five attorneys in their prosecutor's office having free rein to do what they want at government expense. And the fact that both of those prosecutors then, in addition to their five state attorneys, sought out an attorney from Missouri and at county expense and on the county dime, brought an attorney to work on a case that wasn't a death penalty case for the taxpayers of Fremont and Madison County to pay for that attorney, even though it wasn't a death penalty case. And that attorney is still on and still going in this case. And they've expended a significant amount of money. And I suspect it's not at the hourly rate that a prosecuting attorney makes in Fremont and Madison County. I suspect it's significantly higher. And for me to suggest that it's difficult with their six attorneys that they're working on in this case, and I have to do this by myself, and the court recognized the workload.
You've been on a case for 2.5 years by yourself, and
have
all these attorneys, and the state carries the burden at trial, and they can prosecute a case they want. I completely agree with the state's position. The timing here, 2 months before trial is going to start, none of this is new at all. The charges have not changed since the indictment. The co-defendant went through an entire trial, which you observed and knew how long it would take. We talked about this concern a year ago, and here we are on the doorstep of trial, essentially. And the argument that is not persuasive at all to me is you're just learning now how much work it's going to take. Experienced attorneys, which you are, you figure out how long cases are going to take, and you pick and choose the cases you decide to take as a private attorney. And this argument that they have more attorneys than you, they do. That's what they've elected to do. And you've also elected voluntarily, as has Mr. Daybell, to come on this case and represent him. And you've represented him since the beginning, and in fact, even since before this case began.
And Judge, the issue also is that per my representation earlier, is that in 2022, I started seeking out assistance and additional counsel. And I made a diligent effort. In fact, I took the extra step of seeking counsel who were death penalty qualified out of the state, out of state attorneys. I then tried to find attorneys on the Public Defender Commission list and made a diligent effort. And then when I found one, I believe in October of last year, my expectation is that he would have been on this case by now. But then we come into late December and I'm finding out that he hasn't been approved or put on the list, even though the court authorized the funds and I'm in this position. As I've said before, Judge, it's not a matter of being ineffective. And for the prosecutor to sort of hint at the fact that I've been ineffective, I would remind the prosecuting attorney that the fact is that, and I don't want to rehash this, but any continuance was the result of them not turning over a lot of evidence, and a lot of evidence that I ended up having to go through and make a determination So they can't put any continuance on me when it was their own issue in terms of the discovery. The other issues, Judge, are simply this, is that having made that effort to find these attorneys and help me with this case, I recognized that back in 2022. But being able to find someone is a whole different story. And the reality of it is this, is that I'm not making differing statements from what I said today and what I put in that declaration. I've spent a portion of my life representing Mr. Daybell, and I would like to have continued that. But he sees the effort that needs to be go forward. And my expectation was in December or November of last year, I would have had an attorney on by now to assist me in this, and that hasn't taken place. And under our current law and the way the law is written and the way the court has interpreted the law, the only way for me to get another attorney and to have Mr. Daybell have the two attorneys that he wants, and what it was said in that declaration and what is said today is still consistent. The only way to do that is for me to make the decision to step away from this thing. And to step away from this thing would guarantee and require Mr. Daybell to have two additional attorneys. Is it something I enjoy or want to do? No. Mr. Daybell knows full aware how I feel about this case and how I wanted to be involved in this case. There has not been any differing representations to this court. The problem is this, and I recognize, you know what, they get to gauge how many attorneys they want. They get to gauge the amount of money they spent. And in terms of getting assistance for a defendant, I'm bound by the rules and the way the rules are written by our state legislature, and I'm bound by the statutes. And being bound by those statutes, I have no choice. If Mr. Daybell's going to, get the trial that he deserves, either I find someone to help me, which I did starting in with this court in January, but well before that, and to no avail, or I have to make the difficult choice. And I understand it's 2 months before this trial. I understand that. And it's not a choice I want to make. It's not a decision that I want to make in this case. But that overriding want for me to stay on this case, or that need for me to stay on this case, is overridden by the fact that Mr. Daybell should get two attorneys to help him with this. I would have liked to have been one of those, but there's no mechanism to do that. So any suggestion that I've been ineffective is ridiculous. This case was severed. This case was transferred to Ada County, and Mr. Daybell would agree with me that I've done everything to strongly and effectively represent him in this case, and he is completely satisfied with what I've done. But there needs to be additional help. And unfortunately, under our current statutes, I don't get that if I remain on this case.
Your Honor, I just wanted to clarify one thing so we have a clear record.
Go ahead.
The state has in no way insinuated or represented that we believe Mr. Pryor has been ineffective. What we were referencing is based on the affidavit written to the court that we felt that was what was being indicated, is if forced to proceed to trial, he would be ineffective because he simply didn't have adequate time to finish his preparations for trial. So I want to make very clear, we are not saying Mr. Pryor was ineffective. I want that very clear for the record.
I understand that, Ms. Blake, and I agree. The arguments have not been any ineffective assistance of counsel. The arguments have been related more towards going forward in the demands of a 2+ month trial, and whether, given the concerns raised by the defense, a single attorney, that being Mr. Pryor, would be capable of providing all of the defense necessary for Mr. Daybell in this case. So that will conclude submission of argument on the motion. I'm going to take a brief recess, review a few things, and then I'll come back on the record to make a ruling on your motion shortly.
All rise.
All right, we've confirmed the live stream's begun again. We are back on the record on KCR 2221-1623. The court has before it the defendant's counsel's motion to withdraw, filed on January 11th. I've considered the motion along with the declaration in support of the motion. I've also considered the objection from the state. We conducted a hearing today where I heard argument from the counsel, Mr. Pryor, in support of the motion, the objection by Ms. Blake from the state. Also conducted a closed portion of proceedings and an ex parte inquiry of Mr. Daybell and Mr. Pryor. And I've taken all that into consideration in determining the ruling on the motion. The court first is governed by Idaho Criminal Rule 44.1, which under paragraph A talks about leave to withdraw. And I'll just quote that section. No attorney may withdraw as an attorney of record for any defendant in any criminal action without first obtaining leave and order of the court on notice to the prosecuting attorney and the defendant, except as provided in this rule. Leave to withdraw as the attorney of record for a defendant may be granted by the court for good cause. So we've gone through the procedural steps to get here for this to be properly considered. The rule allows the court discretion where it indicates the court may allow for withdrawal, and then looking at the standard of for good cause. So the court will first note to clarify in this case, this is a capital case. Idaho does have a separate rule governing the appointment of attorneys who are on a roster that are considered qualified to represent counsel or represent defendants in capital cases. That's Criminal Rule 44.3. And importantly, that rule only applies when a defendant is represented by a public defender appointed by the court and does not apply when a private attorney is retained in the case. And also importantly, where the court made reference earlier to questions about the mitigation phase, if that were to occur in this case under Idaho Code 19-2515, an inquiry to Mr. Pryor. And I'll note, and Mr. Pryor has correctly pointed out, that the ABA guidelines do apply to public defenders. They are not necessarily required to be followed by private counsel. Private counsel under Idaho rules are allowed to take on a case, capital case, and those guidelines may or may not be elected to be followed by a private attorney. Mr. Pryor clearly is a private attorney in this case, has never been appointed or publicly paid for representation of Mr. Daybell. Mr. Daybell, importantly, does have the right under the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution to counsel, and included in that right is to have the counsel of his choice. And Mr. Daybell elected a very long time ago to have Mr. Pryor represent him in this case. In fact, Mr. Pryor has agreed to take the case and has represented Mr. Daybell not only through the initial stages of the case here where the indictment was returned, but also in a previous companion case, and for I think about 3.5 years now, has represented Mr. Daybell. The court then going back to consideration of the motion before the court. There's an issue here that's been raised by the state about the timing, and of course the court joins in that concern also. Mr. Daybell has been incarcerated since June 9th, 2020. We've got a trial scheduled in 2 months. Mr. Daybell's asserted his right to that trial, and although he has waived his right to a speedy trial, certainly this case has taken a long time to get to trial, and at some point, even with a waiver of speedy trial, the court has to consider the timeliness of a defendant in custody being granted their opportunity for a timely trial. That right also applies to the state, and the state's right to seek justice for victims, to seek a conviction if they believe they have the evidence to do that, and to not have to wait through unnecessary and unreasonable delays in bringing a case to trial. So the court has a duty to try to timely administer cases, and while the rules generally slow things down a lot, there are reasons for that, but at some point the court has to consider the timing here. That's the big issue with this motion, quite frankly, is that the motion, if granted, would absolutely require a continuance of the trial and not just a brief continuance, because what would occur if I grant this motion and Mr. Pryor withdraws from the case, then under Criminal Rule 44.3, the court is required to appoint two capital qualified public defenders. Absent Mr. Daybell having some manner of, again, rehiring a private new attorney or getting one to do it pro bono. The issue there is Idaho has a sparse number of attorneys on that roster, and Idaho is currently experiencing a lot of cases that are already resulting in appointments of a lot of available attorneys. And quite frankly, I don't have any idea who would be appointed of the two. I don't have any idea when we could get them appointed. But what I do know is the trial would have to be vacated and would have to be continued, and I think likely for a long time, maybe a year, maybe even more. Because for new counsel to come in, start over from scratch on a complex case like this, not have any review of discovery or any preparation, they would have to reasonably request time to get prepared, which would have to be granted. Mr. Pryor was raising concerns about trying to get second counsel appointed, and I've tried to accommodate that, Mr. Pryor. We had a hearing, it was exactly a year ago, on January 19th of 2023, and talked about your concern. The way I interpreted Rule 44.3, while it doesn't really address a situation with a private attorney together with a public defender, I don't think the rule necessarily prohibits that either. And so I approved that you could have co-counsel if you could find someone, but of course, it would have to be on that approved roster because this is a capital case. I don't doubt that you've made a diligent effort to try to find co-counsel. That's clear to the court. I know we've addressed that over the course of the last year on numerous occasions, the status of whether or not someone was coming into the case. We're on the eve of trial and no one has come into the case. With that in mind, then, the court has to also look at the impact that could potentially have. If Mr. Pryor withdraws from the case, Mr. Daybell's required to start over, abandon an attorney-client relationship that's been ongoing for several years, start over with a brand new attorney-client relationship with someone that he doesn't know and we can't even tell him who that would be. And also with the delay, I find that that prejudices the defendant. I also would find that given all of the preparation and time that has gone into this trial setting, which has been scheduled out for a long time, made by both the court and obviously the state in being prepared and ready to go, that there should be a presumption that we maintain the trial date. So the two concerns here raised in the motion really are, number one, the fact that Mr. Pryor would not be able to obtain payment for his services. And the court does strongly consider that because attorneys work for their profession and it's important that they get paid and it's a consideration. But that in and of itself does not, in my mind, rise to the level of good cause under the rule 44.1 to grant the withdrawal. The second and I think more concerning issue is some indication in the motion of Mr. Pryor indicating that it would be very difficult, if not impossible, to be adequately prepared for trial. That's what's set forth in the motion. However, upon argument here today also, Mr. Pryor has indicated that he has made steps. I don't find anything in the record that he's been ineffective in his assistance of Mr. Daybell's defense in the case. And so with the concerns today being brought up and addressed directly by the court, both in open and closed proceedings, I don't find any specific grounds indicating that Mr. Pryor has said he cannot and would not be ready and prepared to adequately defend his client. Although it may be difficult and he apparently will not be able to be compensated, it's not in the record that it can't be done. And importantly also, Mr. Daybell has affirmed today he does intend and would like to keep Mr. Pryor as his attorney in this case. And finally, I'll note that in addressing these concerns at that hearing a year ago, There was a representation by Mr. Pryor who said directly to this court, and I'll quote what was said in the hearing, quote, there's going to be no continuance because I'm asking to get out of this case. That will not happen. And the courts relied all along on those representations in getting this case scheduled. So in balancing all that out and looking at whether or not good cause has been demonstrated today, I do not find that there is good cause for withdrawal of counsel. And so under Criminal Rule 44.1, upon consideration of that standard, the court is going to deny your motion to withdraw Mr. Pryor. I will note that I've previously made an approval for a second chair. If one can and will join the case, then the court will permit that and we'll go through the procedure to get that properly done. So that's not a foregone conclusion. Given the timeliness of the trial, I understand that may be difficult. However, we are where we are with this trial setting. And because of the proximity of trial and the necessity of a continuance, if this motion were granted, the court finds that the motion fails to demonstrate good cause under the rule. For that reason, the motion's going to be denied. And Mr. Pryor, you will continue to represent Mr. Daybell through these proceedings. That'll be the ruling on the motion today. And I'll note that we do have more hearings scheduled and coming up, including motions and a pretrial conference. So, Mr. Pryor, do you have any questions on my ruling?
No, Judge. Thank you for your consideration.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Blake, any questions on the court's ruling? All right. Thanks, everyone, for your attendance. That will conclude today's proceedings. We'll be in recess.
All right.
If you want to talk about the agreement or anything,
that's the latest in the case against Chad Daybell. We'll have much more coverage for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.